day. When they defeated the Zika virus right away, there is universal health care and universal education. So this is the debate over the legacy of Fidel Castro.
We're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you so much for being with us, and we'll continue this discussion. Thanks to our guest, Peter Kornbluh, director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive, co-author of Back Channel to Cuba, The Hidden History of Negotiations Between Washington and Havana. Thanks to Lou Perez, professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, author of Cuba, Between Reform and Revolution, and Bill Fletcher, columnist for BlackCommentator.com, founder of the Black Radical Congress. And that does it for our show. I'll be interviewing Bernie Sanders tomorrow on the show. Please send us your questions at stories@democracynow.org. And check out our 20th anniversary celebration, December 5th. Check our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It is 8 o'clock, and the weather today looks like showers, mainly before 4 o'clock, cloudy with a high near 50. Coming up next on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste will have a room full discussing the impact of HIV/AIDS in recognition of World AIDS Day. This is KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for the following three positions: Station Manager, Evening News and Public Affairs Director, and Director of Underwriting. To apply to one of these positions, send a cover letter and resume to hiring@kboo.org, or bring or mail your resume with cover letter to 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer the following question: why is KBOO important? Open until filled. Interviews will begin around December 9th. No phone calls, please. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. For more information, go to kboo.org.
Good morning. Today is November 28, 2016. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. I am Cecil Prescott, and I greet you this morning. This week is certainly a week in which the world will observe World AIDS Day. There are numerous events happening throughout the nation and indeed throughout this city and this area coming up this week. Stay tuned. We'll have a discussion on some of these activities this week. But let me remind you, as we prepare for our program, our phone numbers, 503-231-8187 is our phone number, so you can call in at that number, or you can email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com, and we certainly will get that message and share it with one another. So let me share with you an announcement about one event that I'm aware of and that hopefully we'll be able to talk more about later on this week, this morning, at Bethel AME Church, which is located in Portland at 5828 Northeast 8th Avenue in Portland. There will be a observance, a remembrance, an event. It's entitled Remember, Reflect, Reaffirm, the annual World AIDS Day observance. There will be an opportunity for reflection, community resources, for members to remember your loved ones, and there will be opportunities for testing and to find out, get more information from various agencies and community groups that are working on this issue within our community. So again, that is on this week, December 1st at 6 p.m. Bethel AME Church in Portland. So please, if you are available, make sure that you are able to come out to that event. There'll be various organizations that will be there. And we hope that you will be able to participate. That is World AIDS Day. The event is at Bethel AME Church, and it is entitled Remember, Reflect, Reaffirm. So that's one event, and we will have more announcements, and stay tuned to KBOO more information about that. While we wait for our guests, we certainly have the opportunity to talk to you about that topic or about those things which you might want to reflect on that you heard earlier on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! This weekend, certainly we heard about the death of Fidel Castro, and certainly for my life, he has been a major world leader. Certainly continuing to be and a person, a community, a nation which challenged, as Amy Goodman suggested, and her guest suggested, challenged U.S. hegemony, and certainly stood up throughout the 50s and the 60s. And it would continue to be a way in which that organization, that group, that nation challenged, I think, 11 presidents and 600 assassination attempts, many by the CIA. Those are things that have been something that continue to be of interest to this nation. So if you are there, perhaps you are able to share some of your reflection on Fidel Castro, on where do we go from here. Certainly for most of the time in which Castro and the Communist Party has been in control of Cuba, the U.S. has refused to allow U.S. citizens to certainly travel, to open up ways of communication with the nation, with that nation. Within the last year, we have seen a softening of U.S. position leading up to a crack, and certainly the possibility of more mutual relationships with that nation. Now we will have a new president coming in, and how many days we have left for the new president to come in?
How many days before Armageddon? I'm not quite sure.
But on January,
because of the recount.
Oh, the recount. But on January 20th, a new president will come in, and from his spokesman, and certainly from his statements throughout the campaign, that window with Cuba might close. So what will happen next? We do not know.
It's really interesting to have this contrast and to have this contrast so publicly between the sitting and the incoming. But I'm not really holding my breath because, and not necessarily because of the recount. It's everything has just been so tumultuous, I just decided I'm just going to go along for the ride. I'm not predicting, I'm not pontificating, I'm just experiencing the present. I'm embracing the present. and the anti-present, too.
And the anti-present?
Well, I'm not quite sure what to call it. I mean, you know, and that's just me using it as, I'm being punny. But with the swift change in the political winds that we've had, I'm expecting there to also be possibly a little saber rattling in our direction too, because it's some pretty bold words to say, well, you know, you're a dictator and you've done this, that, and the other, and we don't like you, instead of extending the olive branch and saying, okay, this is a brave new world, yada, yada, we're going to try to make a new beginning, even though you have not been exactly what we want to call a good guy. And I'm looking at America and saying, well, we're not exactly the paragon of virtue either, you know, so therefore.
I certainly, in reading some things over the weekend about Mr. Castro and his legacy, it's interesting in terms of as you say, the attempt to talk about continuing the demonization of a 90-year-old former leader. Regardless, he and the revolution has certainly had an impact on the world beginning in the late 50s. And one thing I read this weekend, which was helpful as a reminder, was how Mr. Castro and the Cuban Revolution continue to be a friend of the struggles for liberations throughout the world, and certainly for Black Americans. I don't remember, but I remember reading.
I remember reading, learning.
About with Mr. Castro early on coming to the UN and staying at the famous Hotel Teresa in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unlike other world leaders, this was like in the late 50s, early 60s, who stayed at more prestigious hotels in Midtown Manhattan. He wanted to be in Harlem, you know, the pre-gentrified Harlem, and in terms of solidarity. He continued to show solidarity to freedom movements and throughout the world in Africa. And interestingly enough, when Nelson Mandela was finally freed and ultimately became president, he continued to thank the Cuban people and Mr. Castro for their support in the liberations of South Africa. And that's throughout the liberation movements in Africa in the 60s and 70s. And also, we must not also remember not only military support, but also in terms of sending doctors, education doctors throughout the world and offering that type of aid.
And Americans also could go to Cuba and study medicine.
Yeah, Black people could go to Cuba and become doctors.
Yes. So, you know... Not to be tongue-in-cheek, but just looking at the way Trump has outlined his and structured his current staff, his cabinet, one would wonder what kind of attitude he'd take to somebody like Gandhi or Mandela, you know, and would he revert to a very old posture and say, well, you know, you are considered an enemy of the state now, and therefore we don't want to have any business and any diplomatic exchange with you. I'm just saying, you know, based on what you're seeing now, the way he's acting. But that is something I was thinking about. I don't know if people want to have any discussion at all about the recount. And I'm just opening up these things because they're in the news. And I know people have, they've been concerned about it. especially if you were not a Trump supporter. If you were, are, you know, how do you feel about it? And yeah, Trump supporters are welcome as long as they can, you know, respectfully articulate the space and time.
Well, I think that would be true of any supporter.
I know, but, you know, folks have been, it's been really polarized because you've had people who've literally been assaulted because of their political belief. So, what can you say? There's a safety pin on our program.
And that's true in any case. So if you have some thoughts about, since this, you know, about Castro and the Cuban Revolution and where do we go from here and the impact, possible impact of the new administration in terms of foreign relations, give us a call, 503-231-8187. As Celeste mentioned, there's a recount?
They're moving forward, I think, in the three of the key states, one of them being Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the incoming president came out
In support of.
In a strange way, in support of, by claiming without any evidence, but he just has a habit of doing this, just tweeting that millions of illegal votes were made. And just by saying that, he's sort of saying, well, then if that's true, maybe there should be a recount. So I don't know whether his advisors are telling him maybe to change the way he made that statement because... He, by claiming that millions of people voted illegally, we should have maybe get the election was a fraud that he claimed before the election.
Well, of course you would know that if you were involved with it. Anyway, I'm not going to go there because I don't know. I don't feel like speculating. It's too much energy, and I'm trying to embrace the present. This is your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 if you're in points east of Hood River, and that's along the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3, and everywhere is KBOO.fm here on More Talk Radio, 503-231-8187.
Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
It's Monday. I'm off. I'm feeling kind of good. I got errands to run, but I'm good. How about you?
Good. I was in Cuba in October, actually, for a week. And the thing, getting back, the most interesting thing has been how I'm accused of getting brainwashed by the Cubans, but when you talk about, you know, authoritarianism, it's like it's okay to have Trump as an authoritarian, but not okay to have Castro.
I was thinking that very thing. You know, I'm thinking, yes, and what's really so bad about it, a very obvious and a very duplicitous megalomaniac as a tyrant.
If you think about it, it's like, if the people of Cuba had really wanted to assassinate him, they probably could have, way better than the CIA.
Oh, yeah.
So that really kind of tells you that the Cuban people that stayed in Cuba really appreciate what they've got, because they've got health care, they've got housing. I never saw one homeless person on the street. I saw lots of art. They do a lot of their political stuff through art. I'm not saying they don't have censorship, but it was just very cool.
So tell us about how, why did you go? Did you go with a group? What did you learn? Was it a first time? And what did you come back with?
Well, yes, it was the first time. I went with the Nation magazine. They have a tour. I wanted to go ever since in the 90s. I was at my brother's in New York. I went to a lecture that talked about how they had eradicated some mosquito-borne diseases there and how they had started, survived the fall of the Soviet Union by going into organic gardening and starting to do farmers markets and things like that, where the farmers could actually make money off their crops, as well as supply the Cuban government. So that's a lot of my interest was there. And we did go see an organic garden. We saw, you know, how they rotate their crops. They saw, it was pretty impressive. We visited the medical school that takes foreign students in. They have a quota from various different countries around the world, and then the countries decide how they want to these people come in, or, you know, what qualifications they need to have to go in, and who gets to go in. That the countries themselves decide that. Cuba does not. They have their major export is doctors.
Right.
It's it's a very poor society, but the way they have stopped the American influence of everything, really, I mean, not everything, but from taking over their economy, from that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to be a sovereign nation. They're not trying to finger, you know, to show a finger to the U.S. They're trying to be their own sovereign nation in our shadow, and I think it's just incredibly admirable how they've tried to do that. And yeah, they have lots of problems. They're just starting to charge to do income tax and things like that, but you know, it's a process, and they've proved that you can have universal health care and universal education and
a far superior education system to what we have here as a public education. I mean, it's my understanding from friends who have gone there that it's not uncommon for the average person to speak two or three different languages, also because it does have a hospitality culture that the rest of the world takes advantage of.
Yep. Agreed. It's great. Go visit.
Okay. Well, I hope to. It's a matter of it staying open long enough for me to get there.
And so before you go, you know, with the opening, and certainly corporations are just waiting to go in there and make Cuba a little, bring back the glories of the Batista's day, just in terms of cultural impact. Did you sense any concerns from the people you spoke with about the possible opening with the U.S. and how they maintain their sovereignty culturally, economically, politically?
I don't remember that people got into that very much. I think a couple of people spoke to it and just basically said it's something we have to watch out for. People forget they have a Congress, mm-hmm. and those people are represented by the people. I mean, they're voted in. And it's just a one-party system. So that's where they wrestle with these issues. And their number one thing, and that's what people forget, the number one thing is how good it is for the people. What does it do for our people? Not what does it do for American corporations?
Okay. Yes. A good focus. And thank you so much for sharing your experiences, Sue.
Thanks. You're welcome.
All right. You know, it's really interesting with Cuba being opened, and I'm saying that with air quotes because as far as they were concerned, the rest of the world, they were kind of open anyway.
Yes.
But there's an ally in that, not necessarily politically or economically, but in terms of fierce expectations of sovereignty, and that's with the Philippines. Because President Duterte has made it clear he's a sovereign nation and he does not bow to the United States. Now,
is he saying that the military bases are going to be removed?
Well, that was his intention. That's the last time I checked in. That was my expectation, mm-hmm. you know, because he's realigned himself with China and Russia.
So whatever happened, well, I was going to say when the wall came down and communism fell in Russia and it was supposed to be this whole bright new day, which lasted maybe 37 minutes. and it's certainly, you know, it was supposed to be bringing together nations. And certainly it seems as if now that there seems to be that new divide, except maybe with, well.
Well, there's no Glasnost, and what was the other one? I think it's, oh gosh, I cannot remember. Oh, it'll come to me later. But it were two big words that, you know, two big phrases that we were hearing about openness and transparency and opportunity for diplomacy. And, well, I think the economic basis has changed, and I think Russia feels just thwarted by the United States, and like we don't keep promises.
But let's get back to Cuba. We were distracted just in terms of what might happen now within the nations, and a caller, Sue, mentioned in passing almost about how they struggled to survive after the Soviet Union collapse, and they were very dependent economically. And with the U.S. Ability to keep trade from happening with Cuba, that certainly they had to struggle throughout the last 60 years. Increasingly so after the fall of the Soviet Union in the late 80s, early 90s. I wonder what happens next. So if you have a thought of Cuba, if you visited Cuba, if you are a Cuban exile, let's hear your thoughts. 503-231-8187. And as I mentioned earlier, we always have may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
So, you know, for our last show, we also talked about Trump. And like that. I'm sorry. It was almost as though my body was saying, don't say that word. It's kind of hard to get it out.
Well, people but, who've been listening to me have noticed I have not mentioned that name.
I was just trying to be specific.
Yes.
But I was just curious if there was anybody out there as a supporter that was feeling like some of the folks are feeling, and that he's been backpedaling. And that was one of the things we talked about last week with his changes in his program. You know, like, he's not going to prosecute Hillary. He's got an open mind about climate change, and he's not so sure that torture for terrorism is such a good idea. And there's even been speculation that President Obama took him to the back room and showed him the aliens. And so I'm just wondering how people feel about that, because the attitude, and you can pick it up in some parts of the press as well, is that the white working class that voted him in are really getting upset and disappointed. And I don't know how people were really seriously believing that he was going to make some of these aggressive and ill-conceived actions anyway.
It would. I think I'm interested in not only in terms of, because it was certainly hard to know what his positions were on numerous issues.
Well, that's because he obfuscated, you know.
Yeah.
He blew smoke.
And so I think in any election, and the same thing happened with the current president was elected, there was a, you know, enthusiasm by their supporters. And then there's the ultimate letdown when the discovery, when reality hits rhetoric. And they do not live up to their expectations of their supporters, and how would they respond? So it'd be interesting, as you suggested, if there are supporters of the incoming president, whether they feel that he is letting down or backpedaling on some of the promises that he made. Who knows? I mean, and also interested in if there are people who, you know, it's been, what, 2-3 weeks since the elections, and once the shock has worn off, where do we go from here in terms of organizing There's certainly lots of things that have been happening. Lots of people have been active, but where do we go? Within the, I saw a headline this morning about the Democratic Party, about will the Democratic Party be able to rebuild?
Well, only if it really does some pointed soul searching like the GOP did.
Well, and that's where I was going, because uh-huh. the GOP, after the last national election, did this whole hand-wringing, and reflection, and came up with some plans about how they should be more diverse, reach out to different populations, and that's the way in which they can win. It's interesting how the political wisdom changes really, really fast. Mm-hmm. So the political wisdom after 2012 was that Republicans can never win because their support base is so narrowed. They need to expand to Latinos and other people, other communities of color and women, and yet 4 years later, we have an incoming Republican president. The House and the Senate remains in control of the Republicans, and they did the exact opposite of what they said they needed to do to win.
But they didn't do it. Here's the linchpin for that whole argument. The Republicans didn't do it. Trump did it. The Republicans didn't want Trump. They just figured out, oh, gosh, he's winning. Oh, right, oh, wait, he's challenging us, or he's going to embarrass us. Oh, snap, okay, he's ahead. Okay, well, we're just going to throw our hat in with him.
But my point is that instead of being a more open party, they uh-huh. became a more closed party,
yeah.
and that's how they won. Or they did win, I'm not sure if that's how they won. but the point is that uh-huh. instead of being, 2 points. One is that they closed rank and did not uh-huh. open up. And second, the political wisdom was wrong. And will the political wisdom, the current political wisdom be wrong about the Democratic Party? About how they might win.
I'm a diehard skeptic. I'm just going to say this. I don't think they necessarily won. I don't think that Trump necessarily won. But, I mean, what is the point of worrying about it? You do the recount. If a recount shows that he won, then I can say, okay, well, this must have been a quote-unquote fair selection because it wasn't an election. I find that hard to believe. Not with all of the evidence that was uncovered in the 2004 and 2000 elections of having been tampered with, and finding votes and what have you. And with Trump screaming and hollering loud and obfuscating and challenging anybody who is looking for clarity, well, it makes the attempt to get clarity look as though you are being some type of political terrorist. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it will be, it's certainly a time of challenge. I don't want to say jovial mood, but not lighthearted, but
organizing.
Yeah. I think how do people feel? Where do we go from here? Are we frightened into inaction? Are the appointees of his administration cause you hope or despair? Let us know what you think. 503-231-8187. And while you're picking up your phones and dialing, let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO.
90.7.
And coming up on this community radio station at 9, we are just beginning to speak this morning by talking about the election. It will continue at 9 on the OMO Variety Hour. And the question is, why did many working class people who voted for Obama twice voted for the Republican candidate this time? That's at 9.
Right, okay.
At 10, Chris Andre with you know, news and headlines, and I'm sure something around.
Hopefully the pipeline.
The pipeline and Mr. The incoming president and Mr. Castro.
And then at 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein. She'll tackle how to protect the Pacific Northwest from the ravages of fossil fuel development. And what I want to say, and not what is the opposite of development, destruction, or by the fossil fuel industry. Because I remember, I believe I was reading past couple of days ago that one of the farmers in the area was noticing oil coming up from the ruptured pipeline, the very one that people are protesting right now. And 11 o'clock, we're going to have disability awareness. Grace Eagle Reed welcomes Lisa Lake, an advocate for the houseless. And 11 o'clock is Voices for Animals. They will look at the hidden cost of holiday meals from animals in the dairy industry to people who consume their products. Wow. We want to thank everybody who has become a KBOO member for your generous support. And if you're not currently a member, it's very easy to become one. You can go to kboo.fm. That's www.kboo.fm, and go to donate. Make a click and donate for our cause.
You know, I also want to remind people that, that coming up this week, it's going to be really exciting here at KBOO.
Uh-oh, what's happening?
We're going to have a mini drive.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Starting tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Just for a few days. You know, you are in the giving spirit. This is the season.
Cable's in the give guide.
So please give. But more on that coming up. So you're listening to the wonderful Celeste Carey.
Yes, and the stellar Cecil Prescott.
And let's see who we have on the line at this time. Bryant, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you this morning?
I'm chill. How about yourself?
I can't complain.
All right.
I'm not going to hold you guys. I just want to make a quick comment about the president and his employees. It really doesn't matter to me, because as long as I do something for myself, I'm going to be all right.
Hello. What might that be?
Well, I got to educate myself. Mm-hmm. I got to keep myself motivated. I got to exercise again. I got to eat right.
All right. And drink lots of water.
Yep.
You know, that's part of my whole thing about embracing the present. You know, the fact is life will change in some ways, and in very many ways it won't, because the bottom line is all of the administrations want us to keep consuming. So they're not going to make the burden too onerous, you know.
Hey, thank you, Brian. When you say that everything's going to be all right, I thought of Kendrick Lamar. So
it will be. You guys take care.
All righty, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, that's the attitude of a lot of folks of color. I finally saw the Saturday Night Live skit that had Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock on it.
Yes.
I was rolling, because that's what... That's what a lot of folks expected. I wasn't going to put my energy or passion into any of this, you know? And it's not that I don't believe in our process. It's that our process really wasn't the process we were taught it was.
No. And, you know, and those of us who barely became a part of the process, limited as it was, it's sort of like we certainly had to survive. This is not anything new. We have to remember the wisdom and the strength of the elders and the ancestors, and certainly pick up on some of their wisdom.
And their wisdom and strength. And speaking of pickup, we got another caller here, and so we will pick up momentarily. There's a discussion going on here in the air room. I can see it. They're deep in thought with furrowed brow.
Furrowed brow.
Yeah. And, you know, usually on Mondays we got a full house. And okay. So come on, people, give a call. We got time. I hope you're not still in shock from, you know, holiday spending. I hope if you were out holiday spending, you were doing it well, thoughtfully. But we're going to pick up right now on Corey, who's holding. Thank you so much. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for your program. I wanted to talk real quick. You guys wanted to discuss Cuba. What I realized about Cuba a couple of years ago, I dated a young Canadian woman, and you could leave, you can go, you can fly from Toronto to Havana because they,
yes,
you know, long people. And so she was Asian, and what she told me, because she was dating me at the time, is that she went to Cuba, went to Havana, and no one really gave her any problem, but she realized that there was a lot of racism against black, you know, black Cubans there,
mm-hmm.
To the point where she was, a young man tried to talk to her, and she's like, I have a boyfriend, showed a picture of me, and he became so offended, why would you date that? And that, what he was talking about, I wasn't there.
Wow.
Why would you use just a picture? So she was, and there was a large, the institutional racism in Cuba is very pervasive, and it's, you know, black Cubanos, and not just Cuba. Something that no one really talks about in this country is that when it comes to Latino Americans, I grew up in Texas around a lot of Mexican Americans. My father's also from Belize. In the Latino American community, which a lot of people don't talk about, there's a lot of self-hatred. And what you realize is when you watch some of the TV shows, every once in a while I watch something on Telemundo, you don't mm-hmm. see a lot of black Latino people, even though during the slave trade, you had more black people go to South America than they did the United States. So
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of just racism. You know, the fact that one-third of, I believe, Latino males voted for Trump, that's fine. But there's a lot of, what I saw growing up, especially in Texas, a lot of Latino people wanted to assimilate.
Yes.
And for them, they wanted to assimilate into white culture. And even when I was in the military, there was a sergeant, he changed his last name from Guillardo, which, you know, everybody knew that was Latino last name, to Gallant. And we didn't know at the time. And it was like he didn't want to be, you know, he didn't want to speak Spanish. He would always speak Spanish. I speak a little bit of Spanish. Like I said, growing up in Texas, having worked in law enforcement, you know, donde vive usted, I had to know certain things. And I grew up where I had to basically live in both worlds. But many Latinos, and I can't speak for the Latino populace, but I can speak for some, they just wanted to assimilate. You know, even in Vancouver, British Columbia, I was when I went to the University of British Columbia, I was dating another young woman. I dated a lot of women. She was from
Brazil. That's another story.
I learned a lot about, she spoke Portuguese, and one night we were out, and a gentleman asked her, was she Mexican, and she became so offended. Enraged, how dare you call me a Mexican? I am from Brazil, my people, you know, and I'm just like, well, you know.
Brazil has exactly the same problems, you know, that class and color exactly. consciousness, yes.
Yeah, but it's a color thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every place that I've been, all around the world, it is a color thing. Even, once again, in the military, I got a chance to visit Australia. I did not see Aborigines until we trained in the outback, and they were there. So
mm-hmm.
there is a something that people just don't like to talk about. The darker you are, the worse you have it in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Even in places like Africa. I mean, I was just reading about Hotel Rwanda and the Tutsis versus, I forget the other group, but it's like, it's the same thing. They're darker than us. Like, really?
And then you said that to say what? They're still human beings. Yeah, I feel you.
Exactly. I'm like, so, you know, and it's, and like I said, also, I appreciate your guys' show. I called in. I haven't called in a couple of weeks. I think there was a lot of trauma going on, but I'm going to be all right. We need people like you because we need objective opinions and journalism out there, because this whole controversy with this fake news, and that's the sad thing. People, even to this day, I was on Facebook and people posting these fake stories. I'm just like, there's no critical thinking involved whatsoever. People are just posting ignorance. And I think that's why we're going to, I'm glad that you said, like, it wasn't the Republicans, it was Trump. We have a really, and I hate to say this, an ignorant populace to this point, where you have a lot of uneducated people. You don't have to have a bachelor's degree, but I just want people to be more educated. But we are going to suffer, I think, as a country, because people have decided that they want, you know, there's this whole air of anti-intellectualism out there, and it's going to hurt a lot of people. So I'm not worried for myself, because honestly, I'm a black dude that does all right for myself. So is my sister. She's a doctor in Texas right now. She's like, at least we know if something goes down, we can buy our way out of it. I'm like, yeah, we got cousins and other people we got to think about as well.
So it's
sad that we have to put ourselves in that mentality, but we're in that place because we also try to bring each other up. You know, I do what I can. She does what she can to bring each other up. But we're trying to figure this out. Like my wife and I are going to make a trip to Canada next week. But let's just look around.
Well, now remember what you said. Now from the beginning, now color is an issue all around the world. So you know, wherever you go, think in terms of not whether or not we're going to be all right, but what's their mentality about human beings. My whole thing is I'm going to be involved in helping people learn just critical thinking. I'm not worried about helping people get past the trauma of the election, because that's not really what's coming. You know, what's coming will be something that was put in place, a plan that was put in place way before Trump said he was going to run. You know, but if people can think critically, then they can analyze their situation and not be swayed or brainwashed by fake news or charming or totally disgusting politicians making their claims. They'll be able to see through it, which unfortunately is what the so-called backers of Trump will be finding out shortly.
And you're exactly right. And I've said this before. I'm not afraid of him. I think he's a useful idiot, but it's the people that he's going to bring around him.
Yes.
The Breitbart guy, you know, Rudy Giuliani. I hope he does allow Mitt Romney to be Secretary of State, because at least I'm someone that feels at least Mitt Romney has some sense.
Well, there it is.
They want Adele in the room.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a big fan of Mitt Romney, but at least, you know, he's someone. Like, if Mitt Romney would have been president, you know, 4 years ago, I wouldn't have been as concerned as I am now. I would be like, you know, yeah, we're taking a step back, but you got to have somebody with some sense in the room, and yeah, I'm talking good about Mitt Romney. Wow,
that's a scary thought. That yeah, things have shifted. All right, well, thank you so much for your call. It is 8:46, and you are on the More Talk Radio program here with Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste Carey, here on your community connection, KBOO, Portland, 503-231-8187. We'll go to Mitch. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Well, thank you very much for hosting this conversation. I am sorry that anybody had to die to open the doors to what could be a very useful conversation for us. Fidel Castro.
You're talking about Cuba, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just the point you made earlier about glasnost, the other phrase and concept that we ought to bear in mind is perestroika.
There it is, yes.
And mm-hmm. I think the reason it's so important that you opened the door to that conversation is because most of the time I was thinking, what do I have to contribute when the one thing I want to avoid is in any way falling into that trap that I felt a lot of my fellows on the left fell into during the years of Castro, which was that we didn't hold him to the same standard that we wanted to live under. Very few Americans would have observed the restrictions on critical thinking that Castro imposed. And so I never... But then I also saw how the right misused that and turned it into this polarity. So I started to think, if you opened up this door for a conversation, how could I get on here and not fall into that trap of polarization where if you're criticizing Castro, it must mean you're defending right-wing America. And I don't want to fall into that. So then it occurred to me that when you mentioned glasnost and perestroika, the two concepts that... tried to open the door, even before you could have a new political system, you had to have a new mental paradigm in the country that allowed the concept of getting on TV and having competitors for leadership positions in government debate each other. How could you, you know, have a discussion, how could you avoid falling into that if I'm criticizing Castro, I'm still not defending the right-wing Americans. Mm-hmm. So I think the way to do that is to if we could talk more about the paradoxes built in to both systems, the
yes.
so-called democratic system and the so-called socialist communist system as exemplified by Castro,
mm-hmm.
because it's certainly different in Scandinavia, where they have certain socialist institutions, but it's pretty much, they also have free markets, they just don't allow the free markets to control their entire society. So, you know, while Norway might be somewhat socialistic and Cuba was somewhat socialistic, you can't really call them both socialistic countries. There's a big difference. So what I was getting at is that there are contradictions built in. So Castro would never allow anybody to get on TV in front of his people and interrupt his 3 or 4 hour speeches in which only he was allowed to present critiques about how Cuba was to move forward in the world. There was never an opposing voice allowed to Castro because the consequences were so high you'd wind up in jail. And I think if Americans could stop and say, we have a paradox built in here too, because we have a so-called free media and free press, and yet there are subjects, as we just saw in our 2-year campaign for president, beginning with the primaries, it's 2 years of full televisation, except it's corporate captured
right.
broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
and so we don't get to discuss things either. There are subjects that are taboo, and because we can't discuss them on the mainstream media, they never become issues that the American body politic ever has to deal with. Like, if I'm going to criticize Castro not allowing televised debates against him, his own government's views, I should stop and say, we have a media that doesn't have even one channel that is properly insulated from market forces. And, of course, you then have to say, well, what are market forces? That sounds kind of abstract.
Well, I was thinking not only what are market forces, but I, for a moment, my mind jumped, well, there is cable access, kind of, sort of, but it has even been struggling to avoid market and corporate forces. So you're right.
Well, most of the better educated people that I find to talk to about media issues refer, they're all hooked on NPR and PBS. But if you ask them the history of when did the Corporation for Public Broadcasting begin,
mm-hmm.
they look at you and they go, oh, early in the 20th century. We didn't even have the discussion about how to insulate one broadcast channel from market forces until LBJ in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
That means we're going back to just one or two generations. That's it.
Yep.
That's how new it is. And at the time, the conversations, because who was paying attention to it then? Only people who were mass comm students. No one else was really paying attention to the discussion about how to insulate a channel from market forces. We don't realize that from 1967 to the present, everything that Newton Minow, the founder of public broadcasting, tried to do has been rolled back, because everything on NPR and PBS, it is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
is corporate under
by corporate. Yeah.
Right.
And so you can't get away from that corporate capture. So I think if we could use Castro's death to explore the paradoxes in how our so-called free system still has the same strictures on it that the communist system has, we might be able to move forward.
Hey, this is great. Thank you for opening up this, and also
thank you.
Thank you
for allowing it, and I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. You know, this type of conversation is so necessary. And one thing that concerns me with the anti-intellectualism, which I think won the election this year, is the way we discouraged critical thinking, but not here. So let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Jim. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, you're here.
Oh, okay, I got a couple of comments. One of them is, when you use the term anti-intellectualism, it strikes me as it relates to the term of a contrary term, which is
political correctness. When you use the term
that it contrasts, I couldn't quite hear you. The background.
And the second one is when you use the term critical thinking. What I often hear and see is that what it becomes is the critical thinking is thinking about things from a
leftist perspective.
From as criticism thinking.
I see.
And the last thing, because I just got these three comments, the last thing is, because criticism thinking is, frankly, that's anti-intellectual. The last one is, there's this term that gets used, when a opposing or a contrary point of view is outright, when there isn't even willingness to consider it, that fits right in with the definition of bigotry. And so it really goes both ways. So anyway, those are my comments. So I'll just leave those with you.
Okay, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. And for me, at least, I'm not quite sure I heard his first point in terms of anti-intellectualism, but I certainly don't equate it with any political philosophy. I can only point to the critique that the future president has had within conservative media. So there was a whole issue of the National Review with which was a magazine that's founded by William
Randolph Hearst.
No.
I'm sorry, that was the first name that came to my mind.
No.
Because I was reading
the conservative thinker of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Buckley. Well, so there was a whole issue of the National Review. The paradigm of conservative intellectualism, which critique. The next president of the United States when he was running. So, I'm all for hearty debate, but the attempt to close off your ears to criticism by either side, I think is wrong. So my anti-intellectualism is not a hidden word for some sort of leftist agenda.
I kind of resent that, because that's like telling me what I mean as opposed to listening to what I mean. And listening, if I recall correctly, is the process of perestroika. Okay.
Yeah.
So, this whole thing about me saying critical thinking, analytically thinking, basically means that you do not buy stuff at face value, that you actually do some reading and you do some comparison and contrast and all the rest of the mechanics to go with trying to have a clear view of what something is. And so, this whole recasting of what the words mean, and assuming that because that's what comes to your mind is what everybody is meaning, is dangerous. It not only paints you in a corner, but it's kind of that. What was that? They had a phrase from Brave New World when they were talking about something that was kind of like bad speak or wrong speak or thought crime, whatever it was. And that same thought also arose out of Animal Farm, when you were thinking improperly. But my bottom line is this: we must read, we must analyze, we must read other sources, whether it be politically right, left, ideologically center, whatever. And you got to talk, and you got to listen, and we got to organize. So the bottom line is, people, get up, educate yourself, and share that information as part of a thinking, analytical process in which you wish to engage with other minds, so we can make it through these next 4 years. As a said in a song by Roma Anthony, you know, you have to know what your people have done so you know what you can do and the full range of possibility of what you can achieve.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us this morning. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey. Have a wonderful day.
Good morning, it's 8:58. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, the Old Mole Variety Hour has a series of interviews. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks with Dan Saris, the Columbia Riverkeeper Conservation Director. The topic is, with the election of Donald Trump, how do we go forward to protect the Pacific Northwest from the ravages of fossil fuel development? At 11 o'clock, it's Disability Awareness, a monthly show about issues affecting people with disabilities and their communities. At 11:30 on Voices for the Animals, co-host Courtney Scott interviews Dr. Mark Bikoff, Professor Emeritus of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Colorado Boulder. Showers likely today with a high near 50. The Old Mole Variety Hour is next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Work Group meets the first Thursday of each month at 7:30 p.m. Please call 231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey in Portland. Based on the 80s cult classic film Flash Gordon, Flash is Portland's premier rock opera parody, complete with a live rock band, Mercury Rising, formed at the School of Rock. Again, that's the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey, 126 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland.